think of the last time you defended something simply because it was yours. Not because it was perfect, but because it belonged to you. Maybe it was a neighborhood coffee shop threatened by a chain, or a family tradition others found outdated. That instinct, that fierce protectiveness of the familiar, reveals something profound about human nature that political theory often misses. Conservatism isn't about resisting all change or clinging to power. It's about recognizing that the things we love are fragile, that what took generations to build can be destroyed in an afternoon, and that sometimes the most radical act is simply to preserve what works. This philosophy begins not in abstract principles, but in lived experience. Growing up in a working-class household where his father voted Labor yet fought developers to protect local architecture, Scruton learned that people naturally become conservative about what they truly understand. His father wasn't defending aristocratic privilege, he was defending home. That distinction matters. When Parisian students in 1968 attacked bourgeois civilization while enjoying its freedoms, Scruton realized they were assaulting the very foundations that made their protest possible. What they dismissed as oppressive tradition was actually the scaffolding holding up a decent society. We imagine ourselves as independent agents, but you didn't choose your native language or neighbors, yet both profoundly shape your life. Society isn't a contract we sign, but a web connecting the dead who built our institutions, the living who maintain them, and the unborn who will inherit them. Edmund Burke grasped this when rejecting the French Revolution's geometrical politics. Revolutionaries treated society like a machine for redesign, ignoring that communities grow organically through countless interactions. Your local school, the neighborhood church, unwritten greeting customs, these aren't obstacles but solutions discovered over centuries. Here's the paradox. Political philosophers ground society in a social contract, as if we gathered one day and agreed to form community. But you can't sign contracts with strangers, you need existing bonds first. What actually binds us is oikophilia, love of home and the people within it. Not aggressive nationalism, but simple attachment to familiar places and faces. After two world wars, European leaders conflated aggressive nationalism with national identity itself, the glue holding democracies together. Democracy requires a we that can disagree without fracturing. Religious identity demands submission. Ethnic identity excludes. National identity, shared territory, language, and history, works because it lets strangers argue about taxes without violence. The European Union tried transcending this with transnational governance, but people don't identify with Brussels bureaucracies. You can't love a treaty. America succeeded as a nation. One language, one law, one territory people claimed as home. National sovereignty means we make laws for ourselves and change them when they fail. Today's culture of repudiation attacks national identity as inherently suspect, but without it, what binds strangers in mutual obligation? Conservatism affirms that despite historical atrocities, the nation-state remains our best vehicle for self-governance and protecting minorities. Destroy that, and you're left with tribalism or empire. Socialists grasp a fundamental truth. We share equal dignity, and society must give everyone a genuine chance at decent lives. No democracy survives massive inequality, breeding permanent resentment. Even Disraeli championed one-nation politics, knowing divided societies cannot stand. We're interconnected beings whose mutual dependence creates obligations beyond contract. When neighbors fall on hard times through no fault of their own, we have a duty to help, not from pity, but from gratitude for shared membership. Yet welfare systems often make work financially irrational. Why take a job if losing benefits costs more than your wages? This traps families across generations, while healthcare and pension costs spiral. The deeper flaw is zero-sum thinking, treating success as something bought with others' failure, leading to attacks on excellent schools for fairness. But education isn't zero-sum. One child's Latin mastery doesn't prevent another's musical brilliance. The real perversion comes from trying to remake human nature through state power, whose good intentions can never be tested. Markets solve information problems brilliantly. Prices signal scarcity and demand, coordinating millions without central planning. Austrian economists like Hayek showed markets are spontaneous order, like language. Nobody designed them, yet they work. But free market fundamentalists miss a crucial point. Markets depend on other forms of spontaneous order for survival. Customs, laws, and moral traditions create the solidarity that markets alone would erode. Traditional morality rescues human life from market forces by recognizing some things shouldn't be bought and sold. Sexual ethics treat intimacy as sacred rather than commodified. The sacred has no price. Modern finance illustrates the danger. The 2008 crisis happened because banks traded debts nobody could guarantee, conducted by spectral entities evading accountability. Adam Smith's economy involved tangible assets with clear ownership. Today's involves intangibles that change hands before liability arises. A new conservatism must defend property against its abusers, ensuring markets function under impartial law where participants bear their actions' costs. Individual freedom is precious but complex. Traditional liberalism gave us negative rights, freedoms respected by leaving people alone. Modern rights are positive claims imposing duties on others. When everything becomes a right, healthcare, housing, education, courts must resolve conflicts absolutely rather than through compromise. This rights inflation paradoxically undermines the liberty rights we're meant to protect. Real freedom rights establish personal sovereignty, zones where your choice is law. From these fixed points, people negotiate and cooperate. The tension is real. We want people free to associate as they choose, yet free association inevitably leads to discrimination. Private schools perpetuating class divisions, clubs excluding outsiders. The conservative answer isn't eliminating such institutions, but expanding access to them. Western civilization has always incorporated diverse influences, from Chinese porcelain to Arabic mathematics to African music. Integration works when both newcomers and natives adapt the common culture. But multiculturalism as ideology demands we marginalize inherited customs while encouraging self-denigration. Political correctness creates a culture of repudiation, dismissing reason itself as merely Western values with no objective truth. What enables diverse communities to coexist is shared civic culture built on Judeo-Christian neighbor love and respect for individual sovereignty. Conservatives should be natural environmentalists. If society is a partnership between the living, the dead, and the unborn, preserving nature follows logically. Love of home, oikophilia, extends to the land itself. Yet, conservative parties have abandoned environmentalism, corrupted by business interests and repelled by environmentalists' surrender to international bureaucracies. The most successful environmental protection comes through national and local schemes. England's National Trust, American National Parks, local fishery management in Maine and Norway. Global institutions have failed. They've accelerated environmental damage by eroding the national sovereignty that makes collective action possible. People protect what they recognize as ours. In a world obsessed with progress, conservatism offers something different, recognizing that some things are worth keeping. The frail crust of civilization rests on fragile foundations. Beneath it lies not Rousseau's noble savage, but the violent chaos that consumed most of human history. Free association, civil society, the rule of law, these aren't natural states, but hard-won achievements each generation must renew. This means defending institutions that create intrinsic value, schools pursuing knowledge for its own sake, churches consecrating the sacred, families teaching love before justice. When everything becomes merely instrumental, we lose what makes life worth living. Beauty offers our greatest resource for bearing loss. Stand in your neighborhood and look around. The buildings, the trees, the institutions, none of this is permanent. It exists because previous generations fought to preserve it. Now it's your turn. Not to freeze everything in place, but to be a good steward of what you've inherited. To recognize that home is not a prison, but a gift. That tradition is not chains, but accumulated wisdom. And that sometimes the most courageous act is simply to say, "This matters. This is worth defending. This is ours."